EWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There's 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There's 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's American 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs that are?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is such. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show, wherever in the world you are listening from. I hope you're all doing good this week. I'm Nick Hunter and this is the UFO Chronicles podcast. Today we meet Andrew in Melbourne, Australia, also known as the Psychic Firefighter. And he will be sharing his interactions with ETs, UFOs, angels and the spirits of the dead. Andrew up next. If you enjoy listening to the podcast and would like to help support my work, there is a couple of ways to do this. Either you can join Patreon and become a patron of the show for as little as $5 a month, or you can donate via PayPal. And if you like, you can set up monthly reoccurring payments. All links to support the podcast are below in the show notes and on the website. Any help is extremely appreciated and it helps the show to continue running. Now, on with the show. Hello, Andrew, and welcome to the show.
Hey, what's up, Nick? Thank you for having me on. I just want to say what's up to you and your audience out there. It's a pleasure to be on your show. This is great.
Wonderful. So thank you for coming on and joining us today. And you are calling from Melbourne, Australia.
Yeah, currently. I am currently in Melbourne, Australia. I am originally from New York. I moved out to Melbourne, Australia about 4 years ago. I had no plan ever on really coming out here at all. I had a download experience, if you want to call it that, a couple of years ago on the beach in Brooklyn, New York. I lived in Coney Island in New York there, right on the ocean. And I kept seeing the word Australia over and over and over. So people that are a little spiritual or open-minded or, you know, have had synchronicity work, you know, when you keep seeing something, there must be something there. So I kept seeing Australia everywhere I looked. Every time I opened the newspaper, turned on the news, turned on a podcast, there was always something to do with Australia. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to go there. I don't know anyone here except one person who lives all the way up in Brisbane, up in Agnes Water. This lady that you might have heard of. Her name is Mary Rodwell.
Yep, I'm familiar, Mary. Yep.
Yep. And I flew out to see Mary, and I spent a few days with Mary and her son, Timmy, and a couple other people in the family I met. And I got a rent-a-car, and I drove from all the way up. So for people that are trying to visualize what I'm talking about, I was all the way up in the corner of Australia, literally, all the way like in the north, I guess northeast it is. And I drove all the way down the coast. And ended up by, like, you know, they call the Gold Coast is one area. a place called Surfers Paradise. I mean, just all sorts of amazing, beautiful places along the way. And I met a lovely, lovely young lady along the way. And to make a long story short, we had a long distance relationship and got engaged, got married. I relocated here. And here I am today, 4 years later.
Wonderful, wonderful. And yeah, it's a lovely drive. Now, Andrew, you have some experiences to share with our listeners. Would you like to let listeners know a little bit about yourself and what you've experienced, please?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So, yeah, it's no secret. If you go on Google, you type my name in any social media platform, Andrew Radziwicz, RADZIEWICZ. If you type in my name on any platform or YouTube or anywhere, you'll probably see UFO videos, UFO pictures, articles in the New York Post. I never thought that I would take a single UFO photo or a video or be in a newspaper because I was a New York City firefighter starting in the year 2006. And it's really not the coolest thing on earth, I thought, to be a New York City firefighter and claim that I'm making contact with UFOs and aliens and stuff like that. So I really wanted to just keep that to myself as like a thing I do on my days off that really nobody has to know about. And next thing you know, the New York Post, the newspaper down there in New York City, they get a hold of my story somehow. I say somehow because I don't really know how. I just get a phone call from one of their editors, and I was told the New York Post 4 years ago, they called me around 4th of July weekend, right, 2018, that area. They said, yeah, we're going to be running a story on you really shortly, and we want you to give a comment. I said, whoa, wait, we're running a story about what? What are you talking about? They said, oh, well, like, you know, UFO stories and your contact, we want you to give a comment about all that. I said, all right, well, show me what you wrote and I'll take a look at it. And at least let's go through it. And then I'll give you a comment based on what you wrote. Well, they didn't want to show me what they wrote. So that right there didn't make me feel the greatest because I said, they could put anything in here. Like, they're not telling me what they're doing. And if they have nothing to hide, why wouldn't they just show me what they wrote if it wasn't bad? So at the moment, I said, all right, now I got to make the call. And that call is, I had to call the New York City Fire Department all the way up to the top of the scale, as high as you can get, the chief of the department. I had to call his office and the media and press secretary we have and explain to them, okay, I don't know what is going on. I don't know what's going to be written, but I got a call from the New York Post and they told me that they're writing an article about my UFO, ET and angel and spirit contact that I've been having for over the last 20 years of my life. So I didn't know what to expect, but they were super duper cool. They had no problem with it. They said, you know, you're not talking about anything wrong. You know, they watched some of the videos I posted. They didn't think there was anything wrong with what I was saying. I was just talking about seeing lights in the sky and connecting with angelic type beings and some spiritual experiences I've had with the deceased over the years and how I started to document them and take photos and some videos. So they didn't have a problem with it in the end. It actually, what I thought was going to be a total train wreck, it really turned out to be a blessing in disguise because, like, I'm having this conversation with you right now. I don't know if I'd be having this conversation right now if that New York Post article did not happen. Because once that article happened, Pandora's box opened, and the floodgates just opened wide open and started spilling out everywhere. And now there was no hiding anything at all. I used to go to the firehouse. Like I said, I got on in 2006. So I would go to the firehouse like every other guy, do my job. I was a regular dude. I'd play ice hockey with the guys. I'd play football, basketball, football, soccer, whatever sports we're playing. I go out with the guys on trips. We go down to Miami, go see the New York Jets and the Dolphins play football. I was just one of the guys. I fit in, did my thing. It's just this UFO thing is something that's always kind of been lurking around in me. It does run in my family. When I say run in my family, I mean there are at least, from what I know, there's at least several. So I would say at least 4 to 5 generations back that I know of contact going back in the family, 4 to 5 generation. I mean contact with UFOs, aliens, spirits, stuff like that. So I know that it goes that far back in my family. And this is something I learned by, you know, talking to my family about this. I knew that this wasn't going to go anywhere. And by me being in this article in the Post, no one in my family wanted to talk about this publicly. I want to be clear, you know, wasn't like my family was like, yeah, that's great. You know, go in the newspaper, go on TV. This is great, Andrew. Yeah, put yourself all over the news. You're a New York City firefighter and you're contacting aliens. You know, it doesn't sound great. The article they wrote, I believe the opening line they wrote is like, he's one of New York's bravest and strangest. So they said that because I have a Facebook page called High Strangeness in Brooklyn. I've changed it to High Strangeness Worldwide because I don't live in Brooklyn anymore. So, of course, the average Joe or somebody reading the newspaper, reading that, they were just reading that line, he's one of New York's bravest and strangest, right there, that may not sound that great to some people. So my family was, of course, wanting to protect me. They didn't want me to get hurt or have anyone judge me on the fire department because of the article. But that did not happen at all. Like I said, the FDNY had my back. They were totally cool with this. They honestly left it alone. At the time when the article came out, I was dating long distance my wife-to-be, who I'm married to now, from Australia. Because before this article came out, I had traveled to Australia in like March of 2018. And I don't think the article came out till almost August of 2018. So in those few months, I met my wife, Jess. We started dating. We decided to get married pretty fast. And we were going to start a family. She was either going to move to New York or I was going to move to Australia. I called the FDNY and they said, well, it's up to you, bro. You can go to Australia. You have a year. So you can go there. You have 1 year. If it doesn't work out or you decide you want to bring your wife and your kids back here, come back to New York, man. The door's open for you. So I figured it was a great thing. Hey, why not, right? Give it a shot. I can at least go to Australia. It's beautiful. If it works out, great. If it doesn't work out, all right, we'll just go back to New York. No big deal. Well, needless to say, you know, that did work out. And in the meantime of this, I met Mary Rodwell. I met Mary Rodwell because I did an interview in November of 2017 by a guy named Michael Harrell. And the interview was called, I believe it's like Love Language Lessons of the Heart. And he's a friend with Mary. And before this, I wasn't posting videos and pictures and stuff yet. I was just out there trying to get some information like, hey, what are these UFOs? What's their intent? You know, communication, all these things. I was really just trying to get information at that point. But I decided to go on Michael's show because I felt very safe with him and Mary was friends with him. And I felt Michael might be able to help me make sense of what the heck is going on. I was experiencing an enormous amount of UFO contact before I went on Michael's show in November of 2017. I mean, an enormous amount of contact. I mean, what I mean by that is if I woke up in the morning and I was, say, in the woods upstate New York, right? I was in the Hudson Valley and no one was around me and I could do whatever I wanted to. No one was around and I had a place to make contact. I could sit outside and make contact all day, all night, and see between 80 to 100 UFOs, no problem, in a 24-hour span. No problem at all. No problem. So that's a pretty good amount of contacts. When I met Mary, she had said to me, Andrew, there's something very interesting going on. Well, when Michael Harrell was interviewing me, he said to me, Andrew, he goes, turn around your computer. Take a look at yourself. I go, okay, what's up? So I turn the computer around. And he goes, dude, he goes, you're turning blue. Now, my skin was not literally turning blue. If that happened, that would be some sort of weird disease or something. That wasn't happening. But what was happening was, as I was talking more and more about this phenomena, the appearance of me was changing from my normal skin tone light to darker, darker, darker blue, darker black, totally pitch black. And then it would get lighter, back to normal, then go back up to dark. And this kept happening for hours. And we took pictures of it. We recorded it. We didn't know what the heck it was. We thought, all right, maybe there's something wrong with the computer. You know, like there's got to be a reason for this. So after this happens, I made the amazing mistake of posting it on Facebook in some UFO chat groups to see if the ufologists of Facebook could give me some information. So, of course, lo and behold, people went berserk. Oh, you know, you're lying, you're hoaxing, you're doing this to get attention. I said, doing what? I don't even know what I'm doing. I'm not doing anything. People were trying to convince me that somehow they thought that somehow I was messing with the electronics of my computer and doing something on Skype to change my skin color. I mean, it was bizarre, the stuff I heard. I didn't do anything. And I even made sure of this. I went out and bought another laptop after this. And the same thing happened during another interview. And I did this about 3 or 4 more times. Bought a new laptop. Did another interview. And while I was talking about the phenomena, my skin tone would start to change to dark blue. So Mary Rodwell said to me, Andrew, I think what's going on is as you're talking about your experiences, she goes, you're activating something. She goes, I think you might be turning on what we know as junk DNA. And it's just showing itself in the form of, you know, you're turning darker. It's not that your skin is actually blue, but something is going on inside of you while you're talking about your contact experiences. I think that it's something genetic. But you need to find a geneticist. I'm not a geneticist. So, who do I track down? The number one, or at least one of the top 5 immunologists, geneticists in the world, Dr. Gary Nolan. So, I know Dr. Gary Nolan through a lady you might know also, Diana Walsh Pasulka. This is going back now, like 2017. I showed Diana a couple photos I had. I didn't have many at this time. I showed her a few photos. And she said to me, she said, I have never seen photos like this ever. I'm not going to name other experiences, not about that. But Diana said to me, she goes, I've seen other experiencers' photos, but I've never seen anything like this. You need to get this looked at, you know, reach out to Gary. So I'm like, you know, I'm thinking this guy ain't going to talk to me, man. I don't even know him. I'm just going to say to him, hey, doc, could you help me? My skin's turning blue, or, you know, it appears to be turning blue. It sounds crazy. So whatever. So I reach out to him. He writes right back. And he goes, I'm very interested in what's going on with you. No, you're not faking it. You cannot fake what you're doing. That is not something on the computer you're doing. It's nothing like that at all. He goes, what I'd like to do is I'd like to study you and your family for like the next decade. I said, okay, well, like in what? Why? He goes, well, is this happening to other people in your family? Are they contactees? Are they having UFO contact or spiritual or, you know, contact with spirits out there or mediumship type things? I go, yeah. He goes, yes, I think this is genetic. So I'd like to study your family's DNA and see over the years, you know, if it changes and whatever else they're doing. What they're doing, I'll tell you honestly what they're really doing. One thing they're doing, which I know they really don't like when I talk about this, but too freaking bad. It is what it is. One of the things that they are doing with this, which I do not approve of, is they want to weaponize this. So what I mean is, Dr. Nolan told me, he said, Andrew, you have a brain within your brain. We call it the antenna. And somehow, people like yourself who are having a high level of contacts almost at will. You know, like you can go outside, say a prayer, meditate, or get a feeling, and these objects are just here. You know, or they're just here all the time. Sometimes that just happens. They're just here. I don't say anything. I said, yeah. He goes, well, you and other people out there, we notice that there's a genetic link that it runs in the families. People in the family have contact together, or they've had it generationally speaking, you know, going down through the years, where they keep getting visited by these things, these beings, these others. And I said, well, what are they? He goes, I don't know. We're really not sure what they are. I said, okay. He goes, but what we are doing is we are taking the DNA from experiencers with the antenna and who are having a high level of contact. And what they're planning to do is they want to take, basically, so I don't know how they're going to do this. I'm not a scientist, but they want to make a drug where you could take a drug and you could have this experience instantly through taking a drug. So you could have a UFO experience, or you could get the tingly sensation, or like you feel like they're coming, or they just do appear by taking a medication. Or they're also working on designing a drug to stop this experience, because a lot of people out there are having abduction experiences or negative type experiences that they don't want to happen. They are working on a drug, which I'm all for that. If people are having experiences and they don't like them, well, then I don't think they should be having them. I don't agree with that. So if they can work to stop it and stop it from happening from people that don't want it, I'm all for that. But to what I call weaponize it and, you know, give it to like a super soldier or people, of course, it's going to get militarized. They're going to give it to people in the military to do all sorts of stuff. I don't like the way it sounds like it's going, you know? That didn't make me feel too good, like, you know, to be part of something like that. That's not why I wanted to get involved in this. I just wanted answers. I wanted to know, what the hell is going on? Am I crazy? You know, have I lost my mind? Is my family crazy? Or are these lights in the sky real, and they're really trying to relay some information to us that's valuable? Or is this a waste of my time and they're taking me on a joyride? What is it? And Dr. Nolan said, I can't tell you either way. I've heard of people getting strung along the whole way, being told that, you know, something good's going to be waiting, or a mass contact event, or something's going to happen on this day. We're going to show up. And of course, it never does. So people get let down and they get really depressed when those things don't happen. Now, I want to be clear. I've never, ever, 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 ever had one negative experience with any of these beings. And I've never been told that on this date, you know, whatever being from the planet Arcturus is going to show up and show himself to humanity. Never, never, ever, ever. It's not like that at all for me. So, you know, I know that those stories are out there, but not for me. This stuff is at will. I go out there, I meditate, and they appear. And the way I'm able to do that is I was taught how to do this by Dr. Stephen Greer, who you might have heard of as well, and his crew there. So I met Dr. Greer in 2011. I was in the military in the late 90s, and I had a UFO sighting. I was the lone night watchman on a boat. The U.S. Coast Guard caught a dirigible down in St. Petersburg, Florida. We were patrolling the Gulf of Mexico, the Caribbean area. I was a lone night watchman on top of the boat, and these two silver objects appeared. And as they appeared, I called down below me to the bridge. I was on what's called the flying bridge. So the flying bridge is on the top side of the boat, literally the outside of the boat. You're up there outside looking with regular binoculars and night vision binoculars, doing a perimeter scan of the boat every 10 minutes to make sure there's no boats, planes, anyone in distress, you know, something that's out there that maybe the radar or for some reason our ships aren't detecting. So pretty important job. Well, I'm the guy on top. I'm the night watchman. I'm on the flying bridge. I see something. I call down to the bridge where the radar man is and the officers, and I tell them what happened. I said, to the northwest, I see two silver objects. They look like they're flying in formation. They're kind of staggered. You need to come take a look. So the officer comes up there. Next thing you know, there's about 15 to 20 guys up there. It was only a 72-person boat. So about 20 people are up there now, and it's probably about 2 o'clock in the morning, so it's pretty late. We're all looking at this object, and they're just moving slowly together, slowly together. Next thing I know, the captain is awake, and he's up there. So if you're waking the captain of the boat up at 2 a.m., it's got to be for something pretty important. He ain't waking up 2 o'clock as a happy man if it's for nonsense. So it was serious enough to the guys and the officers to wake the captain up. So we see these objects, right? I'm following them. I'm looking through the night vision at them. And all of a sudden, they merge together. And as they merge together and as they touch, they merge together as one. And then they don't shoot off in any direction. They just simply vanish. Gone. No trail, no smoke, no heat signature, nothing on the radar, nothing at all. We had no detection of this at all. So that was pretty fascinating seeing that. So I had seen that in the late 90s, and then around 2011, I heard Dr. Greer that he had ex-military people that were involved with covering up the truth of the existence of this stuff. I said, you know what? I want to meet some of these people. You know, maybe they know about the event I saw, or maybe we could talk about other events that are out there and we could help each other. You know, I thought it was a great way for veterans to get together. So I flew out to the desert, and my partner at the time was a New York police officer. So flying out there, me and her, we spent a week in the desert. The first night we're out there in the desert, nothing happens. We sit in a circle. We have all our chairs lined up. We're all bundled up because it's freezing at night in the desert. We're all bundled up, looking around. We don't see anything. Nothing at all happens. And Greer says to us, just be very careful because, you know, if you go back to your room, that, you know, you might have an encounter. It's very possible. So we're like, yeah, whatever. I'm thinking at this point, it's all nonsense. You know, I wasted my money. I wasted the $5,000 to go there with my partner and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not going to work. It's a scam, whatever. So we get back to the hotel room around midnight. And a couple hours later, I'm awoken. And there's a green orb on the wall. I get up. I go to the wall. The thing's gone. I go back to the bed. I wake my partner up. And she's seeing this whole thing at the same time. She's seeing this, I'm seeing this, we're both seeing this. The green object reappears. And it's just flashing. It's about the size of a tic-tac. There's a little tiny light just flashing, flashing, flashing. And the light flashed from, that was probably about 2, 3 in the morning until the sun rose at about 6, 6:30 in the morning. From that day on, it's never ended. Pandora's box open. And since that day, since I was taught how to make peaceful contact through meditation and having an open heart, an open, loving, thoughtful heart and mind, body, and soul, Greer told us, if you go out with a peaceful intent and a loving intent, you will receive that in return. And every day that I've gone out to make contact, which is pretty frequently, I've gone out and I've been able to make contact, and I've never had one negative experience over all these years. I came back to New York, and I got together with a local contact group. So Greer had contact teams all over the world. So based on where you live, you could hook up with a local team, maybe a half hour or a couple hours from your house, get together once a month. You do a group CE5 meditation. And you do it globally, so it's all over the world to keep, you know, the cohesion of the world of people meditating all together is a pretty cool thing. And we had hundreds of pictures and videos that people took. I didn't take any pictures at first when I went up there. I didn't have any proof of anything. I wanted nothing to do with any of this, nothing. So I just went up there, and one night in particular, I was meditating, and I saw these purple tic-tac-sized droplets drop from the ceiling and enter my chest one after another, about a dozen of them. And then I saw them leave my chest slowly, like little teardrop Tic Tacs, leave my chest one after another, float back up into the sky, and vanish. And every day since that encounter, every day of my life, I see this purple energy. It usually happens just before I'm about to have contact. But regardless, even if I'm lying in bed at night, sometimes I still just see this purple energy. It can be staticky at times. It can be like a Tic Tac. It could kind of be like a sparkler, like one of those Chinese sparklers you use at 4th of July. It could kind of be like that. But I see this every single day of my life. People told me, you know, it's your crown chakra opening or your third eye opening. Maybe. Yes, I don't have all the answers to all that. That's possible.
The 40th Film Festival is a new celebration of cinema, created by people who have a passion for all things weird and paranormal. The current season is now open for submissions. Get involved if you're a filmmaker that has a penchant for poltergeists and adores aliens, or if you're a producer devoted to demonology with a soft spot for sci-fi. The deadline for submissions to this IMDb-approved festival is fast approaching. Go to www.fortianfilmfestival.com to submit your film or buy tickets, if you dare.
And then putting this all together for you. In the meantime, I'm into all this UFO stuff. When I was 15 years old, I made a pact with my grandmother that we used to watch Unsolved Mysteries when I was a kid in the 80s and 90s growing up. I made a pact with my grandmother. I said, when you die and you go to heaven, promise me that you'll come back and visit me. But I don't want it to be like a feather on the ground or one coin outside the window, you know, 100 feathers outside my window, you know, lined up in formation, the same color. Okay, well, that's a little different, but I need something substantial that's really going to stand out, that's going to separate that between something that's obvious, you know. I really need to know that you're okay. So we decided to keep that pact. She said, yes, I'll do that. And I said, and if you do it, I'll relay this story to the world. I promise. So 17 years later, something about that, 16, 17 years later, she passes away. A month after she dies, I walk into a restaurant in town where I grew up with my mom. We walk into a restaurant. A dude comes up to us with long hair and earrings. And he says to me and my mom, he goes, someone in your family just died. They had cancer on their face. I go, yeah. And he points to me and mom and he goes, which one of you, it's either one of you, which one of you was born on Easter Sunday? My mom was born on Easter Sunday in the 1950s. So for this medium, whose name is Robert Hansen, to know that, that is unbelievable. Unless somebody told him, of course. And then he said, you have a relative. Her name is Emma. And she died. And she was small, so they buried her in her christening dress. And I'm like, no, that doesn't sound familiar at all. I think I would know that. Wow, that sounds really specific. So I go back to my mom's house after the reading. We walk into her living room, and there's a picture on the wall, like an old photo of a girl in like a white little christening dress. I go, Mom, who is that? She goes, oh. That's Aunt Emma, but she died over 100 years ago. I said, Mom, the guy that just read us said, you have a relative in your family named Emma who died young and was buried in a christening dress. I said, you're telling me that lady on the wall is Aunt Emma, she's a relative of ours, and she died and was buried in that christening dress, and she died over 100 years ago. She goes, yeah, no one even knew her. It's just that my mom looked like her, so they passed the photo down to my mom. So at that point, I decided to track down Robert Hansen. I waited a year. I was still skeptical. I waited a year, tracked him down, let him I recorded the session. He brought up nothing from the last time I got rid of him or mom, nothing at all. Nothing was similar. And at the end of the reading, he says, Andrew, you have this gift. You know that, right? And I go, gift of what? He goes, to be a medium. I said, maybe I see some things. I go, but I'm not a psychic, man. I'm a firefighter, bro. I'm not a psychic. It's crazy. He goes, well, if you come here on the weekends, I could help you train to decipher the messages that they're trying to show you. And I know you see them. I could help you to make sense of what they're trying to show you. And I was skeptical and I didn't believe him. And I went down there on the weekends. I started training with the guy for $20 for 3 hours of training, which is unheard of by a medium. Training someone for 3 hours for $20, I've never heard of that still in my life. The guy would train me and about 20 other people in the room. We'd sit knee to knee or pretty close. And I would sit close to them, look right at them. And all of a sudden, I start to see a black and white movie start to get played out above them. And I just tell them exactly what I'm seeing. For example, I would say, I see a car driving down the road backwards. It hits a telephone pole. A man gets ejected. He loses his left leg, but it doesn't kill him. And his first name began with an L. And he had two children. One of them is deceased as well. You know, it's got to be something that specific when I read. And I started doing that, started reading. And that was over a decade ago. So I was going to the firehouse, doing my firehouse duties. And then on the weekends, I would read. I'd go read for free. And then I would go get with people and just train and read them just to practice and just to help them, because it was helping people because they were telling me I was accurate. So I just kept doing it. I relocate to Australia. It was time to get a job. I get a job in a funeral home as a funeral arranger, conductor, and eventually an embalmer. So I started preparing dead bodies, which was one of the best jobs ever, which that work also helped me to console and help the families grieve and go through the grieving process of losing somebody. I literally know what it's like to take care of somebody that's dead, literally to prepare them, to handle them, to know what it's like as close as you can get to being dead. I would say I've come that close work-wise, working in a funeral home, handling someone, and then dealing with the families after and helping the families heal and giving them what they want and providing them a beautiful funeral is the most amazing job I've ever had. It's just the most beautiful experience ever. And then when COVID-19 came here, my inkbox got so full with readings. People wanted readings. People were going through so much stuff that I decided it was time to stop reading just part-time when I can. Up until COVID, I was reading on my days off from the funeral home, or even prior to that, off in the firehouse. I was reading on my days off, never charging anyone, ever. Never, ever charged anyone. COVID came. My ink box got filled up. I went out, opened my own Australian business here, legit. My real own business. And now I have my own, you know, paid legitimate business. I'm a business owner. And I have clients from all over the world that I'm still seeing. And I wrote a book during lockdown. And I wrote a book about many experiences, you know, things I've seen in life as a firefighter and thereafter. And then I'm also in development right now with developing a TV series about all of this and more.
You have been busy.
Was that quite the intro?
Yes, quite the intro.
Yes, very busy. Yep.
When you were a firefighter, would you have experiences when you're on duty?
Yes, absolutely. The title of my book is going to be called Angels in the Firehouse, because right around Christmas time. At this time, I probably had like 9 or 10 years on the job. This is going back a little while, like 2015, I believe. So I wasn't a new guy by any means. 10 years on the job. I had been to probably a couple hundred fires. So that was no new thing. However, I always trust my instincts. If something doesn't feel right or doesn't see right, I always listen to that, of course. Well, I'm at the firehouse. I'm on one of the upper floors. I'm looking out the window, and I see a UFO. Now, it's after midnight. It's late. I see a beautiful golden ball of light, and it's just moving across the sky. And I'm just watching it. Now, this is nothing out of the ordinary. You know, I've seen them before at work. I've seen them at home. I don't even think I took a picture. I was kind of just like, oh, that's beautiful. Look at that. Wow. And then all of a sudden, I start to smell smoke. Heavy smoke, like fire smoke. I mean fire smoke because as a firefighter, you know the difference between, all right, somebody lit a barbecue in the backyard to, oh, shit, that's a job. What we call a job is a working fire, like someone's house is on fire. So you know the difference between a match burning to, oh, boy, someone's house is on fire. You just know. You get that scent. It just picks up. So I could smell that a job was there. I smelled the fire was in the area, like close. So I literally start running down the stairs from the third floor all the way down to the first. Before I could get down to the first floor, boom, run comes in. Ladder 119 respond to, I think it was Richardson Street, for a house fire. So it was that smoke I smelled. It was that. We get on the rig. The rig is the fire truck. So we get on the fire truck. You know, we're putting all our gear on. We're talking in the back. We hear over the radio as we're going there, it's a cold night, so it's freezing cold. The fire hydrants were frozen in some areas, so you got to be very careful going somewhere. If you're going into a building and the hydrant is frozen, you're not putting that fire out. So you're going to have a big problem. You need what we call a positive water source. You're going to need to find a good hydrant somewhere so you can put the fire out. You don't put the fire out, we're all going to die, you know, or something bad's going to happen. So on the way there, I'm hearing over the radio that they're having problems with water. They're having problems finding a hydrant that's good. I'm hearing reports of people trapped. I'm hearing reports of firefighters possibly trapped. I mean, it's bad, you know, and it's freezing cold out. It's after midnight. It's bad. So obviously, you're at a heightened sense as a firefighter when you hear those things. Because, you know, all those things are going on and you're hearing reports of people trapped, firefighters trapped. You're thinking, oh, man, all right, this is real serious. I mean, we really got to pay attention. You got to get real focused. We're talking in the back where we're going to go, how we're going to situate ourselves. As we pull up on the block, we get on the block where the fire is. The truck stops. We get off. I grab my tools. All of a sudden, I see this purplish mist, like a sparkler, like I was talking about earlier, but like a Chinese sparkler, like a little sparkler in the room. I start to see this mist come, and it's only a couple of feet away from me, and it's almost like time stopped. That's how it felt. It felt like time stopped for a few seconds, and all of a sudden, this misty thing comes in, and it starts to take the shape of like a human type shape. And I could smell the perfume that my grandmother used to wear. My grandmother Joan used to wear, I believe it was Bill Blass, like some sort of vanilla scent from the 1980s or whatever. But I'll never forget that smell of my grandmother. You know, that's how I remember her, is by that scent. If I smelt it now, I would know she was around or her soul was around. So I smelt it, and I'm seeing this purplish mist taking form. And all of a sudden, it takes a humanish type form. It's not exactly my grandmother, but it's kind of like my grandmother. Well, the voice, okay, I could hear in my head, not out loud, but in my head, I could hear my grandmother's voice say, Andrew, do not go in there. And all of a sudden, the mist floats away. So I grab all my gear. We go to the front of the building. The chief tells us, ladder 119, go in the top floor. You're going in the top floor. And the chief walks away. I turn around and look at the guys next to me and I say, no, hold on. They go, what? I go, just wait a second. Now, let me tell you something, Nick. You never, ever, ever disobey a direct order at a fire, ever, unless your life or someone's life is on the line. I felt at that point, based on whatever contact I was having with my grandmother's soul or whatever that was, if it was something disguising as my grandmother or whatever that was, I should listen to it. And I felt, let's just wait 30, 40 seconds before we go running in there. So I turned to the guys next to me. And I'll never forget the guy next to me. He had the orange patch on his helmet, meaning he's a probationary firefighter, a rookie. And I turn and look at him and I go, yo, bro, I go, wait. And I go, just watch. And we look at the building and about 30 or 40 seconds later, boom. Fire comes blowing out of every window on that top floor that we were going to be in. So if we had been inside of that building, Nick, we all would have been incinerated instantly. So all I could say is that night, yeah, there was an angel in the firehouse, and that was my grandmother, and that only happened once. I heard her voice. I saw that apparition thing. Whatever that was, some sort of message was given to me. And if I did not listen to that, Nick, the guys I work with, I believe we all would have gotten cooked to death.
It's very lucky. And you're definitely being watched over.
And I get back to the firehouse. Of course, the guys are asking, like, bro, how'd you know that? What happened? And I just remember telling the one probie, I said, my soul spoke to me. I didn't get into the whole grandma thing yet. I did tell him eventually, but at that moment, I just said, listen, if something in you speaks to your soul or you get a feeling something ain't right, you know, like something does not look right, and you think that you might die if you go do something, just wait. Wait a few seconds. If you wait an extra minute or you call somebody on the radio and ask for, you know, assistance or like, just wait. Because I'd rather have you wait that 30 seconds than you run in there and you get killed or get your leg chopped off and you go after, why didn't I listen to myself? Something in me said, don't go in there. So always, 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 it's a powerful lesson for life. Trust your intuition. Trust that voice. I mean, shit, if I didn't, Nick, I would have been dead. We all would have been killed. We all would have been killed. Everyone in there on that top floor would have died.
It makes you wonder that how many firefighters have actually had this feeling that something's going to happen, but have followed the order and gone straight into the danger zone.
I would say many. I would say many. I'm being dead serious. I'm sure on September 11th, I'm sure there were some guys that something showed themselves or something. I would bet you, if I had to say, I wasn't there on 9/11. I wasn't on yet, but if I had to say, with all the guys that got lost that day, I'm sure it's a very high possibility that a couple guys had a feeling or a message or something come through to them saying, don't go in there. Because I've heard stories of, not firemen, but I've heard stories of civilians that lived that day because that happened. They got a bad feeling. One person got a call from a relative and they said, don't go into work today. I just have this horrible feeling. They didn't. And that happened at the Trade Center.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. You know, when it comes to the firemen, you know, they basically, their main focus was the people in need, you know, so they basically did risk their life to do. You know, we got a lot of respect for firefighters all over the world. You know, what they do is an amazing, amazing job.
That's the thing, you know, like you push the envelope. That's what we're known for. We like to go to extremes and really push things. And, you know, within reason, though, you know, and over time, of course, with time you learn, you know, obviously nobody thought the World Trade Center was going to fall. Obviously. Do you think the fire department would have sent all those guys in there? No, of course not. So, you know, over time you learn, all right, maybe get a little more spiritual.
Introducing the High Strangeness Coffee Blend by Redacted Coffee Company, a medium roast of the Brazilian kind. This medium roast offers flavors of chocolate and vanilla combined with a distinct fruity taste and a unique sweet floral aroma. The experience of High Strangeness doesn't end there, with a sweet butter aftertaste that doesn't fade as your coffee cools. This coffee regains its flavors all the way through your cup, ensuring it truly is good to the last drop. The veteran-funded, employee-owned Redacted Coffee Company and UFO Chronicles podcast have partnered together to bring you the best coffee on and off the planet. Get 20% off your first order now at redactedcoffee.com/UFO. That's redactedcoffee.com/UFO. Or follow the link below in this episode's description or click on the banner of my website. This podcast is fueled by coffee oozing high strangeness. So what are you waiting for? Wake up to the strange.
Even, I have to tell you this, even the fire department now, they teach, they have, if you want to go for free, they give free yoga, meditation, qigong. They give all sorts of those classes all for free every week. They have free classes you can go to for FDNY, for firefighters. So, you know, there's a reason, man, because you're tapping into, you know, you have these energies that are in you. And they get, some of them get pounded into you, and as a firefighter or in, you know, people in general, sometimes we get pounded the wrong way, or things get ingrained in us that aren't good, and we stop trusting our inner voice because we don't want to let down the person next to us, or, you know, oh, I got to go in that building because I was told I had to go in. No, if you get a feeling that you're going to die, or the people you work with are going to get killed. No, don't go in. And if someone asks why, you tell them why after. Now, listen, if it's happening at every fire, all right, maybe you need to go speak to a professional and get some help. But if it happens once in a while, you know, and something bad happens, well, I would say, yeah, there's something to that. Yeah, listen to that.
Yeah, because you know, you're getting it for a reason. So you shouldn't ever really ignore this feeling, this gut feeling.
Yeah, it's not that, like I said, that did not happen every day. The only other thing that I thought was really cool that I saw several times for some reason, we would do a lot of medical calls in the fire department. We were CFRD, so certified first responders. So we would respond to people that were having drug overdoses. So, or even alcohol poisoning or poisonings or any medical calls, anything. But the drug overdoses especially, I can't tell you how many times I've been in a room and we've been working on someone trying to revive them to life, working on them, doing chest compressions, you know, giving them air, everything. And I could see my peripheral vision out of the corner of my left and right eye. I could see what I would describe as angels. Now, are they really angels? No, they didn't say anything, but there were these purplish type entities that were in the room, similar to what happened that night with my grandmother at that fire. Similar, there were these purplish entities in the room while we were doing CPR on people that were reviving from drug overdoses. And I didn't see them all the time. You know, it wasn't every medical call I'd see these purple, you know, whatever they were. But every time I saw them, the person we revived would live. So were they working in conjunction with us doing, you know, the physical act of reviving someone, and then maybe on an energetic level, they were in the room, and I'm just thinking out loud, like maybe they were pushing their energy into this person somehow, or pushing their energy into us to give us that extra drive. I don't know, but it was a pretty cool thing to see. I never told anyone that. I've said it on a couple of podcasts lately because I could care less. I retired, you know, but yeah, man, that was one thing that was very cool. I used to see that. I saw that for a couple of years quite frequently. It was cool.
And do you think it could have been past relatives of the actual victim?
Yes. 100%. My understanding of all this stuff is that when you die, I ask my grandmother. Now, I cannot ask the dead, where are you? Who killed you? Because if I could ask the dead anything, or if you know any mediums out there that claim they can talk to the dead, that they can ask them questions, please, 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 please give them my information and tell them to call the FBI and the CIA, and they should be working on trying to find missing children and people that have been abducted. Because if a deceased person can talk to you and they've been abducted, just ask them, who took you? And let's solve that. I don't have that ability. I cannot ask anything. I just get basically told things. They will show me things. They will say things. But like I've tried to say, like, where are you? Or where are the, you know, where I can't, are you in heaven? Are you this? Are you that? All I know is I've had told to me, my grandmother said to me once, when I was in a room, actually somebody had a Ouija board, which I've only done once. And I said, oh, I'll try it. Why not? Whatever. And I said, who's here? And it spelt my grandmother's name out, Joan. And I go, okay, where are you? And she wrote out, right here. And it's interesting because, Nick, I have done hundreds of readings all over the world of people. You name it, I've done them all over the place. Not one person that I've ever read anywhere in the world, not one soul, not one deceased person has ever said to me, I'm in heaven, or I'm with Jesus in heaven, I'm fine. Never. Nothing about Jesus, nothing about God, nothing. It's, like I said, the only thing that I've ever had told to me was that one time Graham said to me, I'm right here. And my understanding from asking the guy that trained me, Robert Hanton, like I would ask him, like, where are they? How does it work? And he said to me, he said, they are right next to us. Like literally there, take your hand and put it on your ear. That's where they are. They haven't gone anywhere. They just look different. So maybe, you know, once again, I don't have all the answers. I don't know everything. I only know what I was taught or what I've experienced. And that's pretty cool if that is the truth, right? If my grandmother and the people I love are literally right next to me all the time, that'd be great if they never left me and they were right here literally all the time. I hope they are. I hope they're seeing everything that's going on. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it certainly is nice to know that, you know, the past, the ones that were close to you are still, you know, still watching over you. And when it comes to people that have been abducted and murdered and all that kind of, it's always widely accepted that those souls, they don't leave, they stay, you know, they stay on this plane and they still have a voice. You know, they want to, you know, they want people to find them basically, from whether it's just their remains and stuff. So I don't know how many, I don't know how many police departments will actually, you know, accept psychics to help trace. I know some do, and countries do vary, but it is something, you know, if you've exhausted all other means, then, you know, it should be used.
Yeah. My friend, Nancy Weber, she's a medium and she worked with a lot of police departments over the years. And she claimed that it was possible. She said that it was possible to make contacts. She said she claimed that she worked with the FBI and with the local, like, I don't know, police department in New Jersey for over 40 years. But Robert Hanson, the medium that trained me, he worked with the FBI for over 10 years. He was, I believe they had him stationed over in Japan. He was trying to find missing children. And he said to me, he did it for over a decade with, like, probably the best mediums in the world, you know, whoever was working for the feds at the time. And he said, Andrew, he goes, it's nearly impossible to find people that are missing. He goes, because if it wasn't, he goes, they'd be able to solve all these missing people cases, no problem. He goes, it's extremely tough, if not impossible. So, I mean, hey, I'd love to do it. That is something on the side that I am training to do. Like, I would love to learn more about that. I am studying and reading on that. That is something I find very fascinating, and I would love to learn how to do that one day.
Definitely something, you know, if you're able to, definitely try it. Are you familiar with a psychic lady, Debbie Malone?
No, yeah, I'm not sure.
She's in Australia, and she's worked with the federal police and done certain stuff internationally as well, and that's with missing missing people.
Oh, okay. No, W. Malone, I'm not sure. I don't know too many. I've been here for a couple of years, but I don't know a ton of people yet. Yeah, I'm not too familiar.
How long were you in the Coast Guard for?
I was in the late 90s from 99 to just before 9/11. So when I signed up, it was a 2, 3, or 4 year full-time enlistment. So I just did two.
Okay. And when you saw these two silver objects, and
yep.
It wasn't just you, you know, there was 20 other,
oh, yeah.
20 other witnesses.
Yeah. A lot of the guys that saw that, I still communicate with some of them. A lot of them are still active duty. So I don't know if they'd come. Because people have asked me, oh, anyone else come forward? I said, I think most of them are still on the job that saw it. So I don't know if they'd be willing to come forward yet. But yeah, they saw it. Oh, yeah. They saw it, all right. You better believe it. And I remember the names and everything of all of them that saw it. I would never give their names up. I respect that. You know, I respect their anonymity. If they don't want to talk about it, I get it. That's, you know, you're opening a can of worms sometimes, depending on what you're doing professionally. And I respect them. So kind of just leave that alone.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's normal if people are still on duty. And I'd imagine it's something which the U.S. Coast Guard, these sort of experiences would be, you know, I imagine, quite commonplace.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. I know guys that I talked to after that happened, guys that I worked with, they said that, oh, yeah, we've seen them before. We don't know what these things are. They're so common. It could be, you know, military testing. It could be a number of things. Unless they're causing a direct threat, they said they really don't get involved with investigating and trying to figure it out. So at least that's what they told us. Who knows?
And was there a channel to report these things within the Coast Guard?
I thought the next day we'd be debriefed and have a talk or a debriefing or something. Nothing. And then we had an informal, we had a morning roll call. So we had a morning roll call. And at the roll call, we had a small group just for, like, you know, depending on what, you know, area you worked in on the boat. So, like, my little circle of 10 people, I brought it up and told them what I saw because I was the guy that spotted it. And the bosses there, you know, my immediate bosses, they didn't want anything to do with it. They were just like, oh, yeah, we heard about it. I said, did anything else happen? Do I have to make a report? They go, no, don't worry about it. So I was like, found it interesting that anyone wanted a written report. I think that'd be a pretty big thing to see, but I who knows? Yeah, that then, and yeah, they didn't ask for any of that.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to know if that's changed now, because obviously the U.S. Navy, they have lines to report this, allegedly now.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so.
Supposedly, yeah, right.
Supposedly.
Exactly.
It's one thing saying they do publicly and another thing. But then again, they could already have done this for a long time in any case, across all the forces.
It's like anything. They say that, but yeah, you know, if you come out publicly, you're going to get hammered. You're going to get ridiculed. When I came out, yes, some guys in the firehouse were great. They thought it was awesome. Like anything, the guys love you, but they're going to break your chops too. And then people that are out in the public that know you, that you grew up with or didn't know you. I got messages from people I've never met. Nothing. I mean, nasty. Nasty messages from people like, just horrible, you know, communicating with the devil and all, you know, all sorts of things and just crazy stuff they said to me. And I was like, wow, dude, why do you even care? I don't even know you. Like, what? Like, it was just a little bizarre, but you're going to get that, right? You're in the spotlight, you know, it comes with the territory, whatever.
Yeah, you get that. There are people out there which they see everything as just being the devil and demons and evil.
Yeah.
But what can you do? You know, I mean, you know, everyone's entitled to an opinion.
I
don't always subscribe to certain opinions and ideas, but here, that's part of the territory.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I've tried to be open, you know, like, and talk about it, and especially talk about it like, you know, like a professional, like an adult, and not, you know, be cynical. You want to get cynical, don't even bother. I don't even want to engage. But if people want to talk about it and open up about it, great. I'm all for it, to talk and try to figure out what is this. I do not have the answers. I don't have all the answers, but I think collectively, I think if we can get together and kind of put information together and experiences and find what are the common links, right? What are the commonalities here? We might be able to, you know, give people some closure in some circumstances, or, you know, I do it for the benefit of humanity, for evolving, for growing, for challenging ourselves instead of just shunning it. Why shun it? Like, it's happening to people. It's a reality. Let's just keep looking into it and see where it goes, you know, and this could make us, it's going to make us closer instead of really divide us. And the narrative that's out there, is a little frightening because it seems like some, you know, some people may be interested in dividing people. Like, you know, do you believe it or not? Do you, who's right, who's wrong? And I'm not for that. I'm looking at it like we should all be on the same page. We should all be sharing data. We should all be talking. We should all be figuring this out because, you know, if you have half the data, you can't possibly get a, give a full accurate report. So let's all sit together and lay all the cards out and really, you know, give this thing a fair shot and maybe get some answers for once. So I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep fighting and, you know, do whatever I can to let the truth out there for my children and my children's children to show them to not be ashamed of all this, you know, like it is what it is. They're going to experiment or be contactees and see this stuff. And this is nothing they have to hide. Not at all. They shouldn't be ashamed of that. So just be yourself.
Yeah, and people should be open to this. You know, people say to me, you know, how do you know people are having these experiences? And I'll say, well, look at my inbox. My inbox every day is full. You know, I get between 150 and 400 emails a week. That's your answers right there. You know, people have these experiences all over the world. And, you know, I say it time and time again, if someone hasn't had an experience, they know someone that has, you know, whether it's a friend or a family member. So people are having these experiences. People just need to, you know, don't be afraid and come out and share them.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it is. The stigma is getting better. You know, that whole thing, I think, is dying down. People are opening up a little bit. I like that. That's definitely a good step in the right direction. And if we can keep going in that direction and opening up, this, I think, can solve or help to solve or go in a better direction of working towards, not completely, but working towards world peace, or at least people getting together better, doing something peaceful and loving instead of fighting. If we come out with open hearts with no weapons, doing a CE5, I think that's a beautiful way to show the cosmos that we're here in peace and love, as opposed to, you know, pointing a missile or a radar weapon to shoot them down, you know, like. But, you know, I don't make those decisions, but I just think we should be going about it in a much more peaceful manner because we don't know what kind of technology or weaponry these species have. And if we engage with them and we went at it with them, I don't think it would end pretty. I think it would be very sad. And it shouldn't have to end like that. You know, we want to evolve and live and not destroy ourselves. And we got to be real careful, the people that are in charge to, you know, if they're going to weaponize space, you better be real careful because... No, some people, they don't know what's out there, or they think they know what's out there, and they don't know what's out there. So, got to be very careful.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Andrew, what is on the cards now?
Well, soon, hopefully in the next few months, or I'd say within the year, start filming a TV series. I signed a non-disclosure agreement, so I unfortunately cannot tell you who I will be working with, but when I can, I will release all of that. I wrote a book, same thing, can't say exactly with who and all that good stuff yet, because that's going to coincide or kind of be around the time of a television series. But once all that's out, that'll be out there. And when that does, you know, I'll just keep making contact on a daily basis. I'm sure I'll come back to the U.S. to film and go around. And
if people want to reach out to you for a reading...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Do you have a website?
Yeah, sure. The easiest way to reach me is thepsychicfirefighter.com. That's my website. That's the easiest one. Bang, right there. You can find me right through there, or I'm on every social platform pretty much. But the easiest way is, yeah, just thepsychicfirefighter.com.
Wonderful. And for those not quick enough to get a pencil, I'll drop a link in the description for people.
Excellent.
Andrew, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that for our listeners today.
Yeah, you got it. And stay safe and make sure you look up.
Keep watching the skies.
All right, Nick. Thank you. You have a wonderful night.
Yeah, great talking to you, Andrew. Take care of yourself.
Take care.
That is all, I'm afraid, for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter that you'd like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com, or you can reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A big thank you to Andrew for sharing tonight, and thank you all for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe. And keep watching the skies. Goodbye.